Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
Today, guys, we're going to be talking about how to make multiple offers and really how to make your offers stand out from each other. So you're not just, you know, offering $5,000 more and your seller has to hold the property or hold the note for seven more years or something like that. So Jeff is really good at this. This is something that, you know, I struggle as we go through our examples. It's really hard to like say, okay, what else can I do to offer a little bit more, or, you know, something a little different to create some kind of variance there. So Jeff, yeah, let's talk about it. How do you, you know, I know you've been doing this for a long time, but
yeah,
I really just try to get into your mind on these podcasts and, you know, try to say, okay, well, how does Jeff even think about, you know, some other offer?
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, you always send people like four or five offers every yep. time, and they're all different, and they're, you know, some of them are significantly more down payment wise or even purchase price wise, but you really have you know, you definitely got a skill set in that to, you know, to be able to create multiple offers like you do.
Well, the goal is to try to help all of you, including you, Jonathan, to start thinking along the same lines, right? It's really more of a mindset than anything else. Once you understand the basics and the foundation, you will start to develop. I basically have several different options when I'm putting together offers, and that they don't necessarily all have the same exit strategy, right? So I may have one that a house that's free and clear that, hey, if they take option one, I'm probably going to sell to an owner occupant. If they take option three, which is short-term financing, I may do a wholetail. So I may have different exit strategies for different offers, and I don't really care which one they take. Maybe I do care which one they take. And if I do, then I'll try to entice them by making one a little better than all the rest. So it's just a matter of, you know, when we talk, and we did this on the last episode, and we've done it many times, is that I want to figure out right away who my potential buyers would be. And knowing what my potential buyers are gives me an idea of what I need to structure. And then I am constantly thinking about, and this is what I think the one thing that people need help with the most, what is the seller asking for? Can we somehow get close or offer what the seller is asking for? Because ultimately we've got to get that accepted or else we have nothing to work on.
Yeah. 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 If it doesn't work for the seller, it's a dead deal.
Yeah.
So you really think about it in terms of offering, when you offer multiple offers, I should say, you're really thinking about different exit strategies. So you're like, okay,
sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. So that I was just writing that down. It was like, try structuring offers based on three or four different exit strategies. That could definitely help you create different types of offers?
Yes. So, I'll give you, I have an LOI pulled up in front of me right now. And I think you bought this property, if I'm not mistaken. I think we ended up wholesaling this property to you on Cinnabar in Cottonwood Heights. Was that right?
Sounds very, very familiar.
Yeah.
Now,
granted, remember, but we don't necessarily see these properties ahead of time. And if I remember right, the seller was telling us it wasn't anywhere near the kind of condition that it really was.
Right.
And you know, that's part of when you're making offers after gathering information from the seller, you're going to have to modify or change your offers sometimes based on true information. But based on information that we gather, these are the offers that we made. And what I want to do is kind of run through why we made certain offers, you know, and what was the thought process. I think this was actually, Jonathan, I think, now maybe this isn't the one that's on the video that they can get, but I would tell everyone, get the video that we've been offering for free. It will truly help you understanding the mindset from the beginning and help you kind of follow along as I choose what to offer. One of the things that I would always do, I have an LOI and I have different templates. So when I say templates, like I may have a free and clear template. This is where I have the most amount of potential offers that I can offer a seller because there's no money owed. And so I may just go to that template and decide which offers I'm going to make, and I'll fill in some blanks. I may eliminate an offer here or there or whatever, or I may even add another offer. It just depends on the information that I've received from the seller. So what I'd like to do is if there's going to be a cash offer, and there isn't always, but if there is, I usually start there. And the reason that I start there is that I can calculate the cash offer that we're willing to pay within 5 seconds, right? 10 seconds. It does not require much. And most of you would be able to do the same. If you know what the ARV is and at least an estimate of what repair costs would be, you should probably be able to structure a cash offer, especially if it's in the market that you reside in.
Yeah.
So I like to start there because that's going to be my lowest offer, okay, every single time. I'm going to work up from there. So, you know, if let's say a seller said, I want $350 for my property, okay? And adamant about it, $350, okay? So I heard what they said. I heard $350. There are sellers that are, they are set on a particular price. There may not be a reason why. And you may have to try to reason with them to get them off that price. But if I can offer that, that's what I'd rather do.
Yeah.
So in this case, I think that's what the seller wanted was $350. So I think we thought this property was worth, $450.
Yeah.
So we offered $321 and some change for cash. Okay.
Yep.
So that kind of establishes my low end. And so now I'm going to, I think this property is free and clear. We have all kinds of different options available to us. So immediately I could go to what we would call the short-term finance offer, right? Which is more than the cash offer, but trying to get the seller to finance us for, 6 months, with a down payment and You know, we'll pay principal only. There'll be no payments. There'll be interest only, but whatever the case may be. We're basically eliminating any borrowing of hard money. So we can offer more. And yeah, in this case, it might be 333, something like that, an extra 12 grand or something. Okay. So now, excuse me. Now what we're left with is, all right, we have our short-term financing, we have our cash. Based on our last episode, we could even make an offer short-term using subordination, which could potentially get our seller, you know, more money up front. We could use that short-term as well. But now we've got to decide, do we want to include any longer-term financing? And longer-term financing comes into play when, hey, the property may need some work, but it is not necessarily like a rehab, right? It could be dated. You can certainly find deals that are dated, but in really good condition. Or simple repairs, you know, could use some new flooring, could use a coat of paint. When you start getting into, hey, it needs a roof, plumbing, electrical, now you would have to be looking more for a handyman or contractor buyer, as opposed to an owner occupant that could, you know, do this job, you know, as they go over some time. So that's kind of a judgment call, but the more work it needs, the less likely you're going to really need it to be longer term. The less work it needs, so it could be in excellent condition, right? I mean, it could be retail ready, and in which case they're probably asking close to retail, if not retail or more right now.
Yep.
So I basically have, you know, 3, 4, 5 different things that I can create. And I will tell you that a lot of what we decide will be based on what kind of information was gathered from the seller. So I have my acquisition managers now. When a seller says that they are open to taking payments for their equity, they ask a couple additional questions. One would be, normally when we do this kind of deal, that we do it with little to no money down. I assume that would work for you. And if the answer is yes, then we, you know, they pass that information on. And what do I now know? I know I don't have to offer much for a down payment, yeah, which is, you know, kind of crucial, right? I mean, you know, we just got done with a couple of episodes where that's what we talked about. We want to get in light.
Yep.
So if I have an understanding of what that amount is, makes my life much easier, right? Otherwise it's a guess.
Yeah.
And now I'm guessing based on what still will work for me or my buyer, and I'm just taking a stab at it. But if I can get that information, it's huge. Now they may come back and say, no, I can't do that. But then it gives us the opportunity to try to find out, okay, so what do you need? And now if they came back with 20% down, my acquisition managers would say, you know, that's something that we can't do. Could you be flexible on your down payment if we can make the rest of the terms, you know, work for you? And if the answer is yes, then that's what we'll try to do.
Yeah.
The answer is no, then we have a choice. Do we present them with any, put something in front of them, and let's see what happens, or do we not make those offers? Yeah. Judgment call.
Okay. Right.
The second question would be is, all right, sounds good. How long are you willing to wait to get to your equity? Keeping in mind that you could continue to make more money on your property the longer that you go, And if you have some kind of tax consequence, you know, it's been a rental for you for the last few years or 20 years or whatever, that the longer you go, the more you can spread your tax consequence out. What's the least amount of time that you'd be willing to do this? And we're trying to get a number, and then we're going to try to get a higher number. So, I could do it for 2 years. You know, unfortunately, we won't even do this for 2 years. Our minimum is three. So can I assume that you would rather have your money sooner rather than later? And if we put together maybe a 3 year and a 5 year term, that would be something that would work for you? Or, you know, if they came back with a 5 year, then we'd say, hey, would 10 years still be open? Would you be open to a 10 year term if you could make a significant amount more money on your property? So we're trying to gauge down payment and term. Okay. So if we get that information, life is much easier, because now we have something to shoot for. If we don't get that information, now it's pretty much a guess. And that guess is going to be, what's the most I can offer the seller that will still work for me and or my buyer, right?
Yep.
So now I usually flip-flop. So I started on the low end, and I may have offered cash, and I may have offered short-term financing. But what I'm now going to do is, now I'm going to start at the high end. And what I normally do is I use my hybrid interest rate kind of deal. I did, that's when you were gone for a couple of episodes, Jonathan.
Yep.
And I went through how that works. So if you need to, go back and listen to those two episodes. You make the highest priced offer, and, with maybe the shortest amount of term, and maybe you do even principal only. But that's the goal, right? I am trying to get their attention here. So they were asking for 350. Maybe I'm offering them 360 or 358, something like that. Now, I don't want to get too crazy here, but I want to make sure that, hey, whatever term that I offer, and the least amount would be 3 years for us. 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
That, and when I say that, obviously, if it's not any kind of short-term finance kind of deal, but anything more longer term, it's got to be 3 years. And not because I don't think we could work with a 2 year term. I just think when we're selling the property, 3 years is kind of what people look for. So we're going to structure it around a 3 year term, but I'm already offering the seller more money than what he was asking for. And now I'm going to figure out what my payment needs to be. And I'm going to do that in two different ways. One is I'm going to figure out what it should be based on, a 3.5%, a 3.75% interest rate, something in that range of 4% interest rate. And then I'm going to figure out where I need that payment to be. And if I'm on the higher end, then that means that more of it's going to go toward principal and pay it down quicker. If we're looking at cash flow, then I'm looking at, what's the payment amount that's going to leave enough on the table for me or my buyer in terms of cash flow. So minimum I like to be is $350 a month. And obviously, the more I can leave on the table, the better cash on cash return there's going to be, and the easier it's going to be to sell. So, right. So I'm going to play around with this number a little bit. My interest rate is almost always 2.5%. I can change it. I've offered 2%, 1.5%. I've offered 3%. Sometimes stuff pays down too fast. And I, I don't want the seller to get too alarmed. We're going to structure this based on 3 years, 36 term. So here's what we structured. Now, remember our down payment. In this case, we didn't necessarily get that information. So I am guessing on term and down payment. So the price is $358. So where do you think I want to be in terms of down payment, Jonathan? Just knowing me and doing this with me for 3 years, where do you think I want to be as far as my down payment goes?
Around 10%.
10%?
Yeah.
I guess it would depend on who my potential buyer would be, right? So
yeah. But so, I know that like you never like to offer more than 10% down.
No, I'm saying where do you think that I'm starting on this? 10% is the max, and that's if I know I'm gonna sell to a landlord, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm coming in less than 5. So on this case, I'm coming in at $17,000 down payment. That's just under 5%. But I've offered more money than the asking price. It's a short term. And so the way that this would work out, I am asking the seller to finance $341,000. Uh-huh. I'm going to make payments of $1,500 a month. That will be the cash flow to the seller. Then seller won't need to pay anything else. They will receive $1,500 a month every month for 36 months. At the end of the 3 years, the 341 becomes 311. So I will have paid down this mortgage by $30,000. The end of 3 years, good principal pay down, trying to get that balance to a point where, you know, whoever buys this, whether it's an owner occupant or a landlord, by the time that we get to the balloon payment, I want them to have at least 20% equity in the property so they can just refinance without having to bring additional money to the table.
Right. And we've talked about that a lot on past episodes.
Right. And remember that the reason that I offered $358 and $17,000 is that, you know, I still got to add my assignment fee if that's the goal. So, you know, my guess is that we would have tried to add $20,000 to this. That would have put us at $37,000 at a $378. So about 10% down. Everything else would stay the same. You know, if this property is worth $450, there's plenty of spread in it, but most likely we're not buying it that cheap if it doesn't need a bunch of work. So this might have not been the best example, but let's say it's worth $400 and we're buying it for $358. Now they're into it for $378, and in 3 years, 80% of $400,000 would be $320. They would owe $311. They should be okay.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Okay. And then the last thing that I'm looking at is, all right, so I offered $358. The seller is asking $350. What is the seller going to net? And it will be a net in this case because property's free and clear. So all the money that's being paid out is going directly to the seller's pocket, right? So yeah. $1,500 a month, the entire balloon payment and the down payment all go toward seller's net amount. So the seller will net $382,513 for this property over 3 years. So I want that to stick out. That's $32,000 more than the ask price over 3 years. Not bad.
Right.
And they don't have to do anything during the 3 years, right?
Right.
So to me, every part of this first offer is great for the seller except for one thing. What is it?
The low down payment.
That is correct. So, but I got to have the low down payment because I still got to add in my assignment fee.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, if he wants 50 grand down payment, where do I go with that? Not on this offer. I can't make that happen.
Nope.
So I either have to negotiate or I got to switch to a different kind of offer.
Yeah. Short-term finance on that one.
Short-term finance or subordination.
Yeah.
Something. But I can't come up with, you know, 10% down, 20% down, $50,000 down. It ruins my, I'm not getting in light enough. If this is going to an owner occupant, I feel really confident I'll be able to get $35,000 to $40,000 down. But what, and I'm not staying in this per se. I am literally just going and finding the buyer, and I'm then putting the buyer and seller together, and I am getting paid and I'm done. So the buyer will get all the rest of the terms, 2.5% interest, super, even the way interest rates are right now, good luck finding that. $1,500 a month payment on a $400,000 house, that's super good. The only negative for the buyer is it's only 36 months. They'd probably like it to be 10 years.
Yeah.
Good balloon payment. Everything is good for the buyer. You know, obviously, you know, there's one other thing we want to consider, and then we'll wrap this up. And then the next episode, we'll talk about another option or two, how to differentiate. But what strategy do we want to use? Okay, this property is free and clear. We don't have to deal with any mortgage. There's no wrap. There's no due on sale clause. So what strategies do we have at our disposal, Jonathan?
So when there's no mortgage, is that what you're...
Yeah, correct.
So every strategy is at our disposal.
Well, subject to is not, right?
Yeah. You're right.
So we have two choices basically. So contract for deed or land contract where the title does not transfer, or trust deed and note or mortgage where title does transfer. And you could make it either way. But typically what I like to do is if you are in a state where doing a land contract or a contract for deed allows the seller to get the property back very quickly, and especially quicker than doing a foreclosure. If I am doing it, this is a wholesale, that's how I'd rather structure it. Now, if you live in Texas or Georgia, where the foreclosure process is like a month, 40 days, something like that, doesn't really matter. I would do it, you know, trust deed and note or mortgage, because getting it back through a foreclosure is just about as fast as getting it back as an eviction. So if I was trying to stay in the middle, then my preference would be that, you know, title would change hands to my entity. When I'm wholesaling, it doesn't matter as much to me. And I'll typically try to protect the seller. And the reason that I'm doing that is I always tell every seller that if there's ever an issue, you should contact me. And I will either guide you through it or I will just take over and resolve it.
Yep.
And if I'm going to resolve it, wouldn't I like the easiest possible way to resolve it myself?
Yes.
So I can position myself in it to make some additional money.
Yeah, make more money by selling it again. Yeah. You'll take it. You'll sell it a second time.
So we've kind of established a start for where our offers are, right? So we had the cash offer really low.
Cash offer really low.
And hopefully everyone knows how to figure that out. Then we have our short-term finance offer, which is, you know, slightly higher, but trying to avoid hard money loans. And then now we're starting with our longer term financing where we're either looking at, staying in the middle, or we're looking at doing selling to an owner occupant or a landlord. And then next episode, we'll start comparing and contrasting. How do we create another offer or offers that aren't so similar? I see a lot of people say, all right, now the second offer will be for 10 years. But basically all the same stuff. I mean, you've given the seller no reason to take 10 years. if all you're doing is offering them 10 years, right? So you've got to incentivize them. So,
Okay, cool. Well, let's pick it up there on the next episode, incentivizing them and really differentiating the offers. All right, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this. Please rate and review our show. We're still trying to grow our audience. And then hit us up on our Facebook group, the Creative Financing Podcast. And if you guys have deals that you're working on and need help with, put them there, post them there, I should say. And, we'll together as the community, we'll help you structure financing on them. If you want to get a special, if you want to get the video that we mentioned earlier about creating these different kind of offers that Jeff did on a single family home, text CFP or Creative Financing to 877-409-8090. And also, if you guys are interested in the Creative Financing Academy, leave us a voicemail there, or you can even text us as well. That'll work. Guys, if you're interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, please email Rebecca, that's R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at weofferoptions.com. And Jeff's apprenticeship program is a nationwide wholesaling-based program. And, if you love the way Jeff teaches, you're going to love that, because Jeff, the way you explain things is great. You really you simplify it, and yet you go in depth, and you really you try to bring out the mindset, your own mindset. You try to teach your own mindset, like this is the way you need to be thinking about things. So anyway, guys, any last words, Jeff?
The Academy, which is going to focus strictly on this, the Creative Financing Academy, should be up and running. Contact us on our hotline or in our Facebook group. Happy to give you more info on it.
Cool. Okay, guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.